Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
Thanks for joining us once again and welcome back to the Dead Parent Club podcast.
Each week we're going to be talking about what it's like to be members of the Dead Parent Club and chatting to brilliant guests about their grieving journeys.
We'll also be hearing from people far more qualified than us that can give you some top advice on navigating this new normal.
So welcome everyone to the Dead Parent Club.
Now today we're joined by former footballer, pundit and presenter Robbie Savage, whose dad Colin died from a form of dementia in 2012.
Robbie is now an ambassador for the Alzheimer's Society and he's working to highlight the link between sport and dementia.
Thank you for joining us, Robbie.
How are you, Kat, Emma?
Good, thank you.
Good, thank you. Good.
Are you all right, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. It's very hot in here.
Excited for an hour talking about grief, yeah?
Wow, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
Strap yourself in, mate. You're going nowhere.
On for a ride.
I suppose we've got to talk, first of all, Robbie, about your dad. What kind of a man was he and what was it like growing up with him?
Yeah, he was a hardworking father. You know, my hero growing up, he was my first manager as a youngster. Oh. He was my grassroots manager. He was the father who would take me everywhere I went as a youngster. He would miss dinners. He would miss his tea so he could facilitate me, you know, playing the sport I love. So, yeah, he was an amazing man. I was also a little bit scared of him because, you know, my mother used to let me get away with, you know, with murder. Okay. And she'd always say, wait till your father gets home. And I used to say, oh, please, Mum, don't tell Dad. Don't tell Dad. So he had a... You know, he had an authority about him, but, you know, he was an amazing man.
So if you don't mind then, kind of obviously you're affiliated to the Dead Parent Club. So what is it that happened to your dad and how did he pass away in 2012?
Yeah, so my father, you know, I was very fortunate in my football career, Kat, to, you know, earn decent money for a period of time in the Premier League. And, you know, my father, we lived in a small house in Wrexham with my brother. I had the little box room. My father, you know, all his life, he didn't earn much money and then he got a decent job at a place called Continental Can, and my father actually designed something on the widget, you know, in a can of Guinness.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't get any money for it, but we got a certificate in the house that in all his life he worked exceptionally hard. He designed a piece of the widget, believe it or not. So he started feeling unwell when he was about 55. He wanted to retire at 55. So he didn't have enough money. So I suggested to my mum and dad, because, you know, when they've been together for so long, you know, I said, listen, why you continue to work when I can afford it to give you some money, mum and dad, to retire and enjoy the rest of your life together. You know, my mother was a saver. So he did that. You know, I think he had high blood pressure at the time. So that was one of the reasons why I retired. And I just said, listen, you know, enjoy the rest of your life if you've got 30 Aww. Years left with mum. So he retired, and then he loved doing Sudoku. You know Sudoku?
My dad loves them.
Sudoku, and he got
really into it. And then we got internet at the house because we didn't have internet. So we got internet so he could go on his computer. Then all of a sudden, you know, we lived in a village where there was a local pub, and my father used to take me there when I was 14, and I was part of the pool team with my dad. He used to be so proud of me. So we used to continue to go to the pub, and then, you know, in the local shop, because it was such a small village, you know, and in the pub, when my mum used to go for her milk and her bread, they used to say, is Colin okay? So she'd say, why? They said, well, he's become quite aggressive. You know, is he an alcoholic? He seems to be drinking a lot and slurring his words and being quite aggressive. And this is when he was 57. So we thought nothing of it. We just thought he might have been a bit depressed because he retired. And I mean, even when he came to see the grandkids, he was a bit dismissive with the grandkids, not really interested, which was a surprise because obviously my two sons love playing football and he would have been the proudest grandfather in the world to see, you know, my eldest and youngest follow my journey. So, you know, lots of people were saying, is he okay? You know, it's not like him. So anyway, we had the test done. And when they'd done several MRI scans, they found out that, you know, his frontal lobes of his brain were not right. And it was a form of dementia, as Emma said, Pick's disease, which is a young man's form of dementia. And what it does is it affects your speech, you know, that you slur your words. It affects your nature. You become aggressive. And obviously then it leads into, you know, the forgetfulness, not knowing who people are. So that was the first signs, really, of people in the local village thinking that my dad was, you know, an aggressive, you know, man who drunk a lot, really, when it was nothing further from the truth.
And when you found out that your dad had Pick's disease, how did you feel at that time? How do you remember feeling?
Well, at the time, you're thinking, you know, I would expect my nan or my granddad or older people to get dementia. I didn't really know that it was you can get dementia at a very young age, and Pick's disease is one of those forms of dementia where you can get it young. So I couldn't believe it was happening, really, that he'd only just retired and he retired because, you know, he wanted to spend time with mum. And then to realise that the disease was very rapid in terms of when he passed away at 63. It was, I couldn't accept it at the start because, you know, there's been people in my family with who's had cancer and you've seen those people suffer. But to see a man suffer who worked all his life, except he had to provide for others, just not being your father in the end. And when he got dementia, my mother, we lost my mother for the space of 5 years because she was his sole carer. Because you can imagine, my mum didn't want to let him go to, you know, to the hospital, to a home. So it became a period of mine and my brother's lives, you know, where we lost both parents for an amount of time. It was heartbreaking.
Do you think you grieved during that time when your dad was physically still here, but obviously changing?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, there was a lot of guilt from me that as the Pick's disease progressed, you know, the amount of hours I would drive to see him and then drive back and spend with him, knowing that he didn't know I was there, and the guilt of when you leave it and crying all the way back to Manchester, you know, just thinking that was pointless because I was sitting there, you know, and he didn't have a clue I was. That was very difficult to digest, thinking that, you know, this man who, you know, would be delighted to see me, would be delighted to talk football, would be delighted to go for a pint in the local pub, was sitting there just staring through you, was very hard to take.
Must have been really hard for you to offer that support for your mum as well, because I don't know, it's quite a difficult question this, but did it get to the point where you actually kind of dreaded to go there because it was such a hard thing?
Yeah, it was hard. You know, there was times when I would make excuses for not going because, you know, I didn't want to put myself through, you know, driving an hour and a half, sitting there for 25 minutes, you know, looking at my mum crying, looking at my father, just didn't know I was there, and then driving back. So there'd be, you know, I was, you know, looking back now, it was a selfish thing, but, you know, the guilt's still there, you know, from the moment when he passed, you know, when I wasn't there on the night he passed away, because, you know, I like to please so many people, you know, I am quite an insecure person, you know, and I'd already arranged to do a after dinner speech for, you know, a football club, and they were selling the tickets for cancer research. So, you know, because every single night when he was in hospital, I think he was there for 27 nights, and I was there the first 26, and on the 27th night, which was the after dinner for cancer research, where, you know, lots of people had paid good money to donate to the charity, I thought, I can't let those people down. And on that night, you know, he passed when I wasn't there. So I can never forgive myself for that moment. Was it selfish? You know,
No.
I'm not so sure it was, but it's one thing that, you know, I do regret. Listen, I regret it. It lives me every single day that, you know, would he have known I was there? Probably not. But the feeling of everybody else in my family being there but me, you know, is hard to take.
I think that about my brother sometimes. When my mum died, my brother decided to go to the, he wanted to get out of the house, and him and his wife went for a walk. And when he was out, my mum died and everybody else was there. And I think those feelings must be quite difficult when you've spent so much time being there for that time, and then suddenly it's taken away from you.
It was every night. Every night I was there, and we'd take it in turn. So my brother would go, I would go. You know, my mum was there and didn't leave.
It's a waiting game, isn't it?
It's a waiting game. And, you know, I remember getting back into bed. I think the after dinner was in Shrewsbury. You know, I didn't get paid for it. I donated the fee as well to the cancer charity. So it was just a thing that I couldn't let other people down. But in the end, I probably let my mother down, because, you know, she didn't have one of her sons with you when, you know, he passed.
Oh. I think, though, most people would look at that outside of you and go, you've no need to feel guilt for that. Yeah. You were there every single night, and your dad very likely wouldn't want you to feel guilt for that. Have you found any peace with it at all? I know you said you'll never forgive yourself, but have you managed to find any place where you can park it almost? That
no, not really. Not really, no, because, you know, he meant so much to me. Obviously, you know, the things he did for me was, you know, quite remarkable. You know, the amount of stick he got, you know, there was a sense of pride as well. Never missed a game for so many years, travelled all around the world with me. You know, he'd be the one, that's my boy, you know, watching me play. And, you know, so for me to not be there when he passed, I can never, ever, you know, say I can park it, because I should have been there. I should have been there. But it was just me. I like to please everybody I can. You know, people who don't know me might see a brash lad, you know, who kick people on the football pitch. But deep down, you know, I try and do the right thing by everyone.
How, because I feel like you're actually quite self-deprecating and generous and kind as a human being. You have this public persona that seems a little bit different to that. Mm. How do you think your dad would describe his son?
Hardworking, you know, like himself. You know, he said to me, he wrote me a lovely letter. You know, I should have brought it, but, you know, it was a lovely letter, which I've now wrote one to my son.
When did he write that for you?
He wrote it the day I left to sign for Manchester United. Oh. You know, he was standing at the door with my brother. It was an amazing letter, which I still have got to this day. Just say, work hard, be proud. Your mum and dad are always there for you. You know, and I wasn't there when he passed for my mum, which are my brother. So, you know, that's hard to take still. As you can tell, it still really gets to me. I'd hope he described me as a hardworking individual who got the best out of himself and made him feel proud.
Definitely. You've obviously spoken about your brother quite a bit. Have you and your brother spoken about your guilt towards that moment and or anything else to do with your grief, really? We did an episode on sibling grief recently and how differently people kind of cope with it. So have you had any of those conversations with him?
No, listen, my brother's a wonderful man. He's older than me. We've never really spoke about it, really. I think we're two different characters. We look nothing alike. You know, he's actually quite a good looking
I'm glad you didn't put yourself down like that.
You know, but no, we've never really spoke about it. But, you know, he lives 5 doors from my mother.
Wow.
So he was, you know, he was in a position where he could see dad quite a lot, you know, when my dad was at home. But no, we've never really spoke about it, and I don't think we ever will.
What about your mum after your dad died? How did she cope after that? Because that's terrible. 5 years of her life dedicated solely to him.
Terrible. You know, she still has his clothes in the wardrobe.
Oh.
You know, that for the first 2 years, you know, every single Christmas she come to our house. But she wouldn't leave, because she said, I'm not leaving Colin. You know, she wouldn't leave. And she got into a terrible state because, you know, she couldn't believe it. Do you know what I mean? That she'd lost him, because, you know, the amount of money they'd saved, you know, to go away
to
together.
To enjoy it.
You know, my mum won't fly. So she won't fly on holiday when I go on holiday. Now she hasn't even got a passport now because she doesn't want to leave the house.
Aww.
So, you know, she doesn't like flying anyway, but she won't leave the house for a considerable period of time because she still believes that she's, you know, leaving her husband.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's tough. And, you know, she's got arthritis. She had an aneurysm, you know, she keeps going. But yeah, she is every single day. I think it hurts her, you know, and in the cul-de-sac where we live now, you know, there's been grief in the cul-de-sac. You know, her best friend lost her husband. You know, the next door neighbor lost their son. Next door just passed away from dementia. So the whole cul-de-sac of the generation is starting to lose,
you
know,
wow,
people.
Yeah.
So it's become a real tight, you know, little little community, the Pine Close, where, you know, we all grew up.
Mm.
For you, Robbie, being in the public eye around that time, did you feel more pressure during your grief to appear as though you were okay?
That's every day. I have to put on an act. Even more so when, you know, I remember the night he passed, I was in doing the after dinner, and then the following night was 6:06. And, you know, very similar to Chris Sutton, who I do it with now, who lost his father from dementia. You know, he done 6:06 as well the day he passed, his father passed, which, you know, you try and grieve in different ways, and I try to take my mind off it, and I didn't want to let people know, because again, I didn't want to let people down, you know, and I didn't tell anybody really. So I think every day I put on a persona.
Have you ever had any professional help for dealing with your grief?
No. I've had professional help in other ways about, you know, when you retire from football and when you get a bit depressed and a bit down. But in terms of the grief, you know, it's just deep inside of me that still we can talk about it as much as you want, and you can give me all the reassurance. I know you've both lost, you know, your mum, which must have been so heartbreaking at such a young age. When I think about you two, you know, I had my father, you know, till he was 63. So, and I had some amazing years, I'm sure, as you two did with your mother. It's something that'll never go away, the grief, never.
So obviously you do work with Sporting Memories, don't you? And I think, you know, we want to go into that shortly. But touching on that, when your dad was diagnosed, did you ever get the chance to have that kind of conversation with him? Like, you know, that kind of final conversation that kind of gets romanticized
on films.
And stuff like that. No, never.
Because it was so quick in terms of, you know, the Sporting Memories thing. I remember that, you know, they so do such great work. And that's why I'm, as Emma's alluded to, I'm an ambassador for Alzheimer's. That I remember going to the hospital once and Football Focus was on the TV. And I walked into the room and the football came on the TV, and he looked at me for a split second, looked at the TV, and something in his eye knew about football. And, you know, again, I was in floods of tears driving back. But that moment said that he knew something. But I was never able to have that conversation because obviously he didn't have a clue who I was. He didn't have a clue who my mum was, my brother. So to see a man in the space of 5 or 6 years to go from somebody who loved life and was looking forward to, you know, watching his grandson grow up, play football. My eldest son's now at Manchester United, and, you know, I know he'd have been that granddad on the sideline watching, cheering on, do you know what I mean? So it's difficult to take, you know, when Charlie sees, you know, other granddads there, and I know how much it would have meant to his granddad.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How was it seeing your dad pass in the way he did and go through such a long and enduring illness? How has that changed your perspective on your own mortality? Do you think about your own death a lot more?
Well, I think, you know, is it genetic? I've not done that much research on it, but, you know,
Have you intentionally not done research on it?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a worrier.
Talking to two worriers.
At the best of times. So if I had a test, and it suggested there was a chance of me having that gene, which would give me Pick's disease, knowing it's a young man's disease, then, you know, that might mean I might have 10 years left of my life. If you know that, maybe you could enjoy the 10 years, but I wouldn't want to know, and I don't want to know. So do I think about dying? You know, if I put myself in my father's situation, knowing what my two boys would go through if it was me, I wouldn't want my boys to see me like I see my father. I know what I went through seeing, you know, my hero, you know, somebody who gave up everything for me to go through what he went through. I couldn't, you know, put my boys through that.
Do your boys have any memories of their granddad before he got Pick's disease?
They don't talk about him, really. They've got photos of him, but it's probably memories where, if they did, you know, it wasn't the granddad, because the granddad, so when dad was 57, 7 years ago, 63, 10, 9, my boys would have been three-ish. Three and four. So if they did have memories, it would have probably been of a grandfather who didn't spend that much time with him because of his disease and the aggressive nature, not wanting to be around people. Then they would probably think, in a way, it would probably been better they were younger, not to see their granddad like he was.
Has your experience changed the way you are as a father, do you think?
Hopefully I'm a good father. Hopefully I'm a good father. You know, my father, as I alluded to in this podcast earlier, was, I'd always, when I say scared, it's not the right word, it was respectful, you know. So as I've said, my mum would, I would get away with murder with my mother. But as soon as she said, you know, she used to chase me up the stairs. And I used to hide in my room. But she said, wait till your dad gets home. And I think that I wasn't scared of him. I respected him.
The disappointment thing.
Yeah. And thinking that he wouldn't take me to football because I wanted to be a football and dedicated. You know, girls used to come around the house. I used to, you know, I was at school, knock on the door, and I used to hide and say, Mom, I'm not in. And when my mum went to town on the bus, because you used to get the bus from the bus stop, I used to let all the lads in the house, but mum didn't allow it. So she'd knew if they'd been in it, because if one cushion was out of place, mum would know, and she'd go mad. Why have you had people in the house? Where my dad would be more relaxed about it. So the way I try and do it now is that, you know, I'm just relaxed. If Charlie or Freddie want people around the house, come have sleepovers, because I wasn't allowed sleepovers, really. You know, I used to go to my mates. I was the first one in on a Sunday when it went dark to have a bath, when all my mates could stay out. I was the one who wasn't allowed to get his clothes dirty on the muddy pitch because we didn't have a washing machine, but all the other boys did. So I try and be a bit more relaxed with my kids. But there's a fine line, because they get away with a lot more than me. And, you know, they do respect me, obviously, but I just try and let them get away with a bit more.
A bit more freedom.
Do you think, what do you do for Father's Day? Do you think of your dad? Do you do anything in particular on Father's Day?
Because it's on a Sunday, you know, I'm usually working. You know, do I have the time to go and visit his grave? I've been to his grave on numerous occasions. You know, it's beautiful. It's in the Moss Valley near Wrexham. I should do more, but it's still that guilt of going to the grave, you know, thinking that I wasn't there when he passed. It's still that guilt there that, you know, my brother and my mother say, you know, why haven't you been to the grave? And I have been on numerous occasions, but I'm not into birthdays and Christmas, and I've never been into that kind of thing. I think it's due to my football, because I've always worked on those periods. So when everybody else is celebrating, you know, birthdays and Christmas, I was always working, dedicated to try and get the best out of what I had. And I had to, you know, I couldn't drink. So I've never really celebrated or been to occasions where I like to remember them.
Just out of curiosity, but it's a bit off piece this, but do you drink now?
Not much at all, no. I like a glass of red wine. I was never a drinker, never drunk, never liked beer. My dad took me for my first pint when I was 19, and it must have been a bad pint, and I was so ill. I've never drunk beer ever again.
Interesting.
I like a glass of red wine now and again. I'll probably have about 2 or 3 glasses on a weekend, that's it.
I do find that stuff like that can be really actually have a benefit when you've suffered a big loss, because alcohol ends up being a lot of people's crutches, doesn't it?
But saying that, Kat, now me and my partner, my business partner, have just acquired Macclesfield FC, and we've just created a new bar. Which is quite remarkable. So there might be a few glasses later in there after watching our team.
We'll get him back on when he's hungover one morning. And Robbie, if there's anyone listening to this now who's going through what you went through, watching your dads go through that, what advice would you offer them?
I would say, you know, I do feel guilty from his passing because I wasn't there, but I would say don't feel guilty in feeling that when you want to go and see him, don't feel guilty if you don't want to. Because as I'd said to Kat, I'd be driving there thinking this is pointless. You know, what am I doing? Because he doesn't know I am anyway.
That is fascinating that you are so hard on yourself about the fact that you weren't there and the fact that you were like, oh, you know, it was painful going to see him. And yet if you were offering advice, you'd say don't. Just on that, say if it was your sons in the same situation as you.
Yeah.
And they'd been to visit you for 26 nights. And then on the final night, they were attending an awards ceremony for free because they didn't want to let people down. So they weren't there with you. And you passed, but you could come back and have one conversation with your son.
That's a good question.
What would you say to them?
It's a good question. It's a great question. What would I say to my sons in that situation? You know, I would say, listen, you know, it's a good question, Jones. That's a good question.
I certainly don't think you'd want them to feel guilty the way you
do. No, I wouldn't. Of course I wouldn't. No, because they were doing things for the right reasons and probably they would think that because it's been 26 nights, it could be 27, 28, 29, 30 nights, you could have gone on. And that small window of opportunity to go and do good for, you know, to try and save people's lives in you know, who have suffered with cancer and help those people, he would probably say, listen, son, you know, you've done that at the goodness of your heart because, you know, you're a good person and you want to help other people. You know, don't feel guilty. I know he would say that, but, you know, and my sons would say that to me, but it doesn't stop the feeling that everybody else is there. And, you know, you think about what other people would say because it was known the next day that my father had passed and people saying, well, Robbie was at a charity event. Why wasn't he at his dad's death when his dad passed? Then you've got the people on social media, you know, who were just vile and horrible, you know, saying that, you know, as your father's body decomposed yet the day after on Twitter, which was nasty.
Disgusting.
So, you know, because you're in the public eye, people, you know, people like to say those things and be nasty when they don't know how much grief and how much you're hurting.
That definitely makes it so much worse. I remember Ian Stringer talking about that last year, about how he got a lot of grief and it was difficult with the relationship with his mum.
How do you cope with that? Do you find a place in your mind where you can box off the cruel comments? Or do they still affect you now?
No, they still affect me now because, yeah, those people on social media feel like they've got the right, you know, to hide behind a screen and, you know, there's no consequences for their, you know, nastiness and they just think they can do it. Would they say it to your face? I'm not so sure they would, but it still hurts. Of course it does because those tweets, you can still see them. Why? How does somebody write those tweets when you've, you know, you've lost your hero? So it does hurt. It does, you know, you do think about things like that, but you've just got to try and be better than these people.
So now obviously in the line of work that you do and because of your dad's death, you work with Sports United Against Dementia, don't you? So what kind of work does that involve and what are you guys kind of trying to
do? It just helps, you know, families and recall, you know, sporting occasions in their life and see if it, you know, helps stimulate the people with dementia. I remember going to Leicester. It was heartbreaking. A gentleman who supported Leicester City for a number of years and he collected programmes and, you know, his wife would get all the old programmes. I would go through them. He'd remember him. His face would light up. You know, you could see the pain in you know, it's always the partners of people with dementia where people forget. You know, because they're going through so much to be with somebody for 25, 30, 45 years, then to see the one you loved, you know, not the person you've been with. It's just a completely different person, transformative disease. So what they try and do is, you know, make these people recall sporting memories and see if it can stimulate them. And, you know, as I said, you know, when my father seen Football Focus on the TV, you know, I could see a glint in his eye where he knew for 1 minute that there was something to do with me and sport which resonated with him.
Robbie, I know that since losing my mum, it's made me value my dad more and appreciate what life, I hope a long life I have left with him in it. Has the way you lost your dad and how you saw your mum caring for him and then how she had to deal with it afterwards, has it changed your relationship with her at all?
I've always been close to mum. Do you know what I mean? I was always, you know, mum's little boy. And still am, you know. What I try and get into my kids now is even when my eldest is 18, my youngest is 14, you know, when they go to bed or when they leave the house, give mum and dad a kiss. Don't give me a kiss. My eldest, like, gives me half a hug. But, you know, I always, every time I see mum, give her a kiss. My dad, I didn't care, give my dad a kiss. And I try and, you know, get my boys to do that with me, because you never know when life's going to be cut so short, you know, for whatever reason. But I've always been close to my mum. You know, she's a star. She's on the radio show I do. She's got a column in the newspaper. She secretly loves it, you know, but every weekend she'll phone me and say, I'm not doing it anymore, when she feels a bit down. But, you know, she's an amazing person. You know, what she deals with in her life in terms of health, you know, she keeps going, she keeps battling on. But you'll never take away, you know, she'd never leave that house. She'd never go on holiday. No money in the world matters to her. You know, all she, you know, she said to me, I think they had about, you know, they had their savings, and she, you know, she's give it all, the two grandsons and to her granddaughter, because she said no amount of money in the world which you save can bring him back. So
she wanted the memories.
She wanted the memories, not the money. So she's giving all to the grandkids. So, yeah, she's an amazing person, but you can see how much every day it hurts her.
Yeah, I've got to say, when I was talking to somebody about doing this podcast, your mum definitely took the limelight.
Yeah, she's great, Val. Yeah, she loves it. You know, she's an amazing, inspirational person. And, you know, by writing a column, you know, in the paper, she's helps other people in the same situation, you know, a lady of her age. She talks about so many things, ladies stuff of her age.
Go on, Val.
But, you know, she gets letters saying she helps people now. So, aww. You know, you can't quite believe that my mum, you know, is helping other people. This is quite amazing.
It's beautiful.
What's your favourite memory of your dad, Robbie?
I've got so many. You know, he was, you know, how proud he was that his son was, you know, playing the sport he loved. And he helped me massively, as I say, without my father, getting to games. You know, I try and do it now for my kids where, you know, you can take them, and sometimes you think, oh, I've got to drive and that traffic's going to be bad, but you do it. You do it for your kids, you know. My father had a brown Cortina, and the registration was UTU525R. It had brown cloth seats. It wasn't, you know, the nicest car in the world, but it was a car that got us everywhere. It was a car that my dad was proud of, and, you know, the amount of times it broke down, flat tire, my dad changing, you know, the tires on the side of the road. But I think the best memory, one of the best memories of dad is that, you know, playing in his grassroots team, I was one of the best players at under 14 level, and we played at Wrexham, and my dad gave the team talk, and then my mum would wash the kit after the game and take it home and hang it on the washing line in the back garden. There was all the kits. And we won the game 1-0. I scored the goal, and it was against my old team, Sligh United. And after the game, this old man come into the changing room, and he said to my mother, oh, who was the number 7? And my mum said, oh, that was my son. But she said, I haven't got time for you. I've got to pick this kit up and wash it and look what he's done. Look how muddy it is. You know, I haven't got time. Yeah, I've got time. I've got to hang all this on the washing line. And my dad was saying, who's that? And she said, oh, I have no idea, Colin. Get on with it. We got to get home. We got to go to the chippy. We've got to get the kids bathed. It's like, anyway, he handed my mother a card. So she put it in her pocket. So on the way home in the Cortina, my dad was saying, who was that man? So you can imagine how proud he was of me, as my mum was. And we're driving home, and she got out of her pocket, and on the card it said it was Hugh Roberts, Manchester United scout. Wow. So you can imagine my father's reaction. What are you? Why didn't you tell me? What are you doing? That's it. He's missed his chance. But, you know, we rung him when we got home, and then, you know, I went for trials and signs. So, you know, just their relationship, how much he adored my mother, I think is the biggest thing. Listen, you know, when my mother went through the Is it the menopause?
Come on, Robbie.
I like how he's looking at us.
I remember.
The menopause. You are sweating a bit.
You know exactly what it is.
My mum's been through it, so I think I know what it is. She smashed the kitchen up. every plate, every dish, every
You'd
everything.
Probably just annoyed her.
Yeah. I remember my dad, we were sitting in the front room and you could hear the kitchen getting smashed to pieces. And my dad said, let's let her get on with it. Let her get on with it. And then after she'd finished like it with her, whatever it was, I know the menopause lasts for longer than smashing the kitchen up. I think it does anyway. There he was consoling her, giving her a hug and said, don't worry. And he cleaned everything up. You know, he was such a good man who worked exceptionally hard, but their relationship was such a special one.
Oh, I love that one. What a thing to take away.
I know.
So obviously we're releasing this episode as kind of part of our sort of aim to get more men talking about grief, especially with it being Father's Day in June. So I was wondering if you had any words of wisdom to share with any men out there who are perhaps struggling to talk about their grief or have perhaps kept it hidden underneath it. You know, a deep blanket for a long period of time.
Yeah, I feel comfortable in talking about it now. You know, I had a podcast with Matthew Said and Andrew Flintoff, and it was, you know, we talked about there, and I, you know, it was the first time I really talked about it and opened up, and I was in floods of tears. You know, I still get emotional when I talk about it, but as the more I've spoke about it, the better I get, you know, at talking about it, because it helps. It really helps. And talking to people, you know, about grief, about anything mentally, you know, it can really, really help you, because, you know, I've lost friends, you know, who maybe if they'd have talked to people might still be with us. So yeah, I encourage everybody to talk if they've got problems. You know, I'm involved at a football club now where I know people have struggled mentally. You know, and I encourage them to talk. You know, I try and engage with them. I try and, you know, make them feel as important as I can, and make them feel comfortable enough so they can open up in an environment, a safe environment. You know, so I encourage everybody to speak out, and if they can.
Oh, perfect.
Well, Robbie, thank you so much for joining
us. Is that
it? And, hang on a minute. We've got to wrap up. You can stay for the goodbyes. You're not that busy, are you? I was going to say something nice about
listen,
you, but
I think you two are inspirational as well, though. You know, I've listened to a few of these podcasts, and you know, to lose your mother, you know, at such young ages must have been incredibly difficult. So, you know,
it's a bitch.
I can't imagine, because, you know, as I say, my father meant the world to me, as my mother, you know, does. And, you know, I'm going to have to go through that, you know, at one stage, losing, you know, my mum, which is going to be, hopefully it doesn't happen for a while, obviously. But
after you've lost 100 and the next one, you're like,
you know, it's going to be, I just can't imagine it. You think they're going to live forever, don't you?
You do.
Well, you hope they do, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I hope is, you know, when you have children, I think the one thing that I hope and pray, and if somebody could give me a wish now, the one wish I would do is I hope I die before my children.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. That's the way it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the only, if one wish I could take away from me is that, you know, I die before my children. Mm. That would be the one
life's
wish.
Natural cycle.
Yeah,
really. Would,
I'm hope and pray that is the case. Yeah.
Well, Robbie, obviously, you know, our friendship is such that we wind each other up and that, but I know that your dad will be so proud of you,
because
behind the public persona is a man that does want to give a lot back.
Yeah, thank
Hence
you.
Hence why you've sat in a very hot room for the last 40 minutes talking to us about it. So thank you so, so much for joining us,
Pleasure.
Robbie.
No, yeah, we really, really appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on the Dead Parent Club podcast. Remember, you can reach out if you want to talk to us or if you've got any suggestions on any areas for us to cover in the future.
Yep, you can drop us an email at hello@deadparentclub.co.uk. You can reach out to us on Instagram at Dead Parent Club Podcast, on Twitter at DPC Podcast, and on Facebook.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.